The title of this message is Who is Kamala? So I'll stand for Deuteronomy 17:15. It says, Thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother. You may be seated. Who may the Israelites set over them? An individual who is not their brother, or a person who is their brother? It's kind of obvious what this verse says. This verse says that they may not set a stranger or a foreigner over them. A while ago, I did a series of sermons that dealt with the Stuart family who ruled over England, Ireland, and Scotland. The Stuart dynasty began in Scotland in 1371 when Robert II came to the throne. After him came six kings and Mary, Queen of Scots. In 1567, Mary's son, James, became King James VI of Scotland. In 1603, he inherited the English throne as well as James I. From that time on, the two countries were ruled by the same monarch. I began my study with James I of England, a.k.a. James VI of Scotland. Although altogether there were seven Stuart monarchs who ruled both Scotland and England, along with a commonwealth that was between the years 1649 and 1660, under the leadership of the Lord Protector Oliver Cromwell. One good thing about studying this is it makes today's world seem not as crazy as it was back then. Here are the seven Stuart kings and queens who were royalty in the middle of the Protestant Reformation, that produced betrayal, civil wars, there were three of them, hatred against other religions, regicide beheading, forced slavery, accepting of Jewish loans, allowing Jews to come back to England after almost four centuries of being exiled, abdication of the throne, we had the president resign, didn't we? And replacing one Catholic king with two Protestant ones, etc., etc., etc. James I of England and Ireland and James VI of Scotland, the same person, ruled both nations from 1603 to 1625. A short review. On March 24, 1603, James VI of Scotland achieved his lifelong ambition when Queen Elizabeth I died, and he inherited the throne of England. He would have liked his two kingdoms to be completely united. However, Scotland retained its own parliament, established church and legal and educational systems. He was the longest reigning monarch of the Kingdom of Scotland. 58 years he ruled. He believed that kings were appointed by God and that their authority could therefore not be challenged by anyone. This idea is known as the divine right of kings. It brought him into conflict with the English Parliament. In 1605, a group of Jesuit Catholics failed to kill the king in the gunpowder plot. James declared that everyone must attend church on Sundays. How about that for the United States? Catholics were not allowed to celebrate their own form of Mass, and the king refused to listen to Puritan demands for Protestant church reforms. He's the one that authorized the translation of the Bible into English in 1611, and most of us have a King James Bible. His son, Charles I, ruled 1625 to 1649. He was beheaded. Charles I went to war with Spain and then with France. The former king, James I, had left the country deeply in debt, so Charles I had to ask Parliament for the money to fund his wars. Parliament refused. When Henry VIII left the Catholic Church of Rome about a century earlier, England became split into two factions, Protestant and Catholic. When Charles I married Henrietta Maria of France, a Roman Catholic, she influenced her husband to becoming more and more tolerant towards the Catholics of the country, and therefore the Queen was becoming a problem for the intolerant Protestant state. His marriage produced 9 children, which included 2 future English kings, Charles II and Mary Henrietta, who married William III of the Orange Netherlands. In 1629, Charles I dismissed Parliament and decided to rule alone. He did so for the next 11 years. Like his father, he believed in the divine right of kings and did not believe the Parliament should challenge his authority. He forced the country into a civil war between his supporters and the supporters of Parliament, where 200,000 Britishers died. 200,000 died, Protestant and Catholic. Charles I was beheaded after the war, and as a result, the country had no monarch for 11 years after that. They were the Commonwealth Republic, no king. Parliament ruled, then it was Oliver Cromwell, and then his son Richard Cromwell. Then Charles II, he ruled from 1660 to 1685. He was reinstated as the monarch. During the Civil War, Charles I's son, Charles II, had to flee from England. He spent years in exile, but he was restored to the British throne in 1660. Charles II was careful not to make the same mistakes as his father. Parliament's powers increased during his reign, and 2 political parties emerged: the Country Party, which became known as the Whigs, and the Court Party, which became the Tories. After him was James II. He ruled from 1685 to 1688, only 3 years, and you'll find out why. Charles II was succeeded by his brother James II. James II had Catholic sympathies, and he angered Parliament by promoting Catholic causes. James II had 2 wives. He had 2 daughters, Mary and Anne, by his first wife, who were both Protestants, so a Protestant succession seemed certain. However, James II's second wife, Mary of Modena, who was from Italy, a Catholic, bore him a son who would be in line to be the next king of England. And when he was baptized, the powerful Protestant government did not want a Catholic to be a ruler. So what did they do? They sent for Mary, James II's daughter, with his first wife, Anne Hyde, and William III, who was her husband. He was the son of Charles I's daughter, also named Mary, and William II, Prince of Orange of the Netherlands. They were invited to become joint rulers of Britain. James II was forced to give up the throne in 1688. Mary II and William III then became queen and king. Because no blood was shed during this revolution, it became known as the Glorious Revolution. So Mary II ruled from 1689 to 1694, along with her husband William III, who ruled from 1689 to 1782. They ruled jointly. James II, the Catholic who abdicated the throne, later continued to claim the thrones of England and Scotland for the rest of his life. He encouraged rebellions and a futile attempt to regain the kingship. So in 1701, Parliament passed the Act of Settlement, which said that only Protestants could hold the British throne. James II's first wife, Anne, was a Protestant, though she converted to Catholicism, and their daughters were Mary II, wife of William of Orange and Queen of England, and Anne, who succeeded Mary as queen. James II's second wife, Mary of Modena, was Roman Catholic, and their son was James Edwards, who goes by the name of the Old Pretender. In 1715, the Old Pretender attempted to supplant King George I, who couldn't speak a word of English while he was on the throne. You probably heard of the Jacobites. The name of James in Latin is Jacobus. Their rebellion failed miserably. The Old Pretender's son, Charles Edward Stuart, was known as the Young Pretender. He, too, attempted to regain the throne, but was very disorganized. And in 1746, that's pretty close to when our country started, 20 years later, left for France and ended his life a drunk in Rome in 1789. That's the year George Washington became president. Thus ended the Stuart dream of sitting once more upon the British throne. After James II's abdication, William III and Mary II's reign is reported to have been insisted in their ascent to the English throne by a loan of 2 million guilders from Francis Lopez Siso, a Jew. During William III's time on the throne, he refused a petition from Jamaica to expel the Jews. I wonder why. William III's reign brought about a closer connection between the predominantly Sephardic communities of London and Amsterdam, thus aided the transfer of the European finance center from the Dutch capital to the English capital. And the last Stuart king and queen was Anne, who ruled from 1702 to 1714. Although Anne had 18 pregnancies, only 5 children were born alive, and all died young. As Anne had no direct heir, their crown passed to their cousin's son, George I of Hanover, when she died in 1714. This brought an end to the Stuart line of British kings and queens, although the two pretenders tried to regain the throne but were unsuccessful. King George I of Hanover, which is modern-day Germany, never fully learned to speak English and instead conducted government affairs mostly in French and his native German. He remained unpopular in England throughout his life, partly because of his inability to speak English, but also because of the perceived greed of his mistresses and rumors concerning the treatment of his wife. The British crown changed their German names after the Stuart royalty ended in 1714. When the royalty came from Hanover, which ended in 1841, then the German name Saxe-Coburg and Gotha in 1917 changed to the made-up name, English name Windsor, due to their war with Germany in World War I. So, what has all this to tell us about Kamala? It is coming. One must know the background to understand what happened. And I've got a map here. I always have maps. There's England. This became Germany right there. So when Anne died, her cousin became king. Couldn't even speak English. So, what happened in England? I'm glad I didn't live in England this time. You shall find out shortly. The movement to allow Jews to settle in England after an absence of almost 4 centuries, that's 400 years, was led by Manasseh ben Israel, a rabbi, writer, and printer from Amsterdam, Holland. He wanted the Jews to be able to return to England because he believed it would hasten the arrival of the Messiah. If you listen to Messianic Jews, they believe in Jesus the Messiah. In 1653, Israel and a few other rabbis visited England to rally support for the idea of Jews returning. They found an unexpected ally in Oliver Cromwell, who was a Calvinist. The Calvinists glorify Oliver Cromwell, but he was a terrible person. Cromwell had seen the economic benefits Jews living in Amsterdam had brought to the Netherlands and wanted the same for England. Britain's economy had been devastated by civil war. Remember, 200,000 killed? And the prospective commerce Jewish merchants could bring in was appealing. Oh, they wanted the money. Furthermore, there was a popular belief that the second coming of Christ could not occur until Jews were living in all parts of the world. In 1655, Israel petitioned the British Council of State that Jews be allowed to resettle in England. In response, Cromwell convened the Whitehall Conference, a gathering of merchants, lawyers, and clergymen, to discuss allowing Jews back into England. Though the conference did not reach a unified conclusion, the lawyers in attendance pointed out there was nothing illegal about allowing Jews to return. There was no official policy change or new law, just a verbal promise from Cromwell, and in 1656, Jews were allowed to settle in London once more. Where were the preachers in this meeting? Were they just silent? Didn't they know that the Jews were our Savior's most vehement enemy? I guess they did. The Amsterdam Holland Jewish bankers financed a mercenary army for Oliver Cromwell, who was a member of England's House of Commons. The purpose of this was to serve their mutual goal to overthrow the royalty of England. England was involved in a religious civil war. The Dutch Jewish bankers used Cromwell to divide and conquer in the name of militant Calvinistic Protestant Puritanism. Soon Parliament discovered the foreign intrigue between Cromwell and the Civil War, which included tactics of economic warfare in which Amsterdam used international commerce to destroy the English economy. As a result, Parliament declared war on Holland in 1652. Cromwell, loyal to the Amsterdam Jewish bankers, reacted in 1653 and dismissed Parliament. You no longer exist. And made himself the supreme power and ended war against Holland in 1654. Look what he did. Then followers of Cromwell took sword in hand and slaughtered countless Christian priests and laymen who opposed his Calvinistic Puritan version of Judeo-Christianity. Cromwell, who was then an agent of the Amsterdam Jewish bankers, attempted to create a League of Protestant Nations as an anti-Catholic royal government that bankers would secretly control. The first task before the Protestant League of Nations in 1657 was to attack the Spanish Netherlands because it was a Catholic threat to Amsterdam. Cromwell blessed the Jews, the anti-Christians, and removed England's restrictions on Jewish immigration in 1657, but they did not relocate en masse until 1664. Soon after Cromwell's promise, about 300 Sephardim, that's Spanish and Portuguese, Jewish merchants settled in London. Thus began a new chapter for the Jews of England. There were attempts by businessmen, Christians, and aristocrats to re-expel them, but the economic boons they brought were too good to refruit, and England's new Jewish community was allowed to stay. They're still there. However, anti-Semitism, which is really anti-Jewishness, persisted, and there were laws branding Jews less than citizens and limiting their rights. However, their place in British society was far more stable, and slowly through the centuries, they would gain more rights and opportunities. Now, so far, this doesn't have anything to do with Kamala, but it's beginning. In 1655, Jamaica was conquered from Spain by the British during the time of the Commonwealth. Jewish resettlement in Britain marked the beginning of a new era in the Jewish-Christian relations, putting an end to centuries of entanglement. Soon after the massive relocation in 1665, the bubonic plague struck England. In 1666, the Great Fire of London occurred. England was suffering from God's judgment for disobeying his word. Do we have fires in this country? Oh, who is the most hated man in Ireland? Now, who do you think is the most hated man in Irish history? It's not Hitler. It's not Churchill. It's not Roosevelt. It's Oliver Cromwell. Why? The 17th century was the bloodiest in Ireland's history. If you have any Irish in you, you had better pay attention to what I'm about to tell you. I have a little Irish in me. My mother's father was an Irish Catholic. Two periods of war, 1641 to 1653 and 1689 to 1691, caused a huge loss of life. During the 17th century, Ireland was convulsed by 11 years of warfare, beginning with the rebellion of 1641, when Irish Catholics rebelled against the domination of English and Protestant settlers. The Catholics briefly ruled the country as Confederate Ireland. Against the backgrounds of the Wars of Three Kingdoms, until Oliver Cromwell reconquered Ireland in 1649 to 1653 on behalf of the English Commonwealth Republic. Cromwell's conquest was the most brutal phase of the war. How brutal was it? By its close, over half of Ireland's pre-war population was killed or exiled as slaves, where many died due to harsh conditions. As retribution for the rebellion of 1641, the better quality remaining lands owned by Irish Catholics were confiscated and given to British settlers. That went over good. 40 years later, Irish Catholics, known as Jacobites, fought for James II from 1688 to 1691, but failed to restore James II to the throne of England, Ireland, and Scotland. Ireland became the main battleground after the Glorious Revolution of 1688, when the Catholic James II left London and the English Parliament replaced him with William III of Orange. The wealthier Irish Catholics backed James II to try to reverse the penal laws. Under these laws, Catholics could not hold commission in the army, enter profession, or own a horse worth more than £5. Catholics could not possess weaponry or arms, could not study law or medicine, and could not speak or read Gaelic or play Irish music. In addition, they were against the land confiscations, where their land possessions were stripped from them and given to English settlers. Protestants in Ireland supported William III and Mary II in this glorious revolution to preserve their property in the country. James II, William III, fought for the Kingdom of Ireland in the Williamite War, most famously at the Battle of Boyne in 1690, where James's outnumbered forces were defeated. It is calculated by some historians that the war cost over 100,000 lives through sickness, famine, and in battle. How many people we lose in the Vietnam War, Korean War, World War II, World War I? That's more than we lost in those wars. The Irish were dehumanized by the English. The Irish were described as savages, so making their displacement appear more justified. In 1654, the British Parliament gave Oliver Cromwell a free hand to banish Irish undesirables. Somebody called us undesirables, didn't they? Cromwell rounded up Catholics throughout the Irish countryside and placed them on ships bound for the Caribbean, mainly to the islands of Barbados and Jamaica. By 1655, 12,000 political prisoners had been forcibly shipped to Jamaica and into indentured servitude. At the 1660 Stuart Restoration, when Charles II returned to the throne, Cromwell's dead body was removed in hatred from its resting place in Westminster Abbey and displayed at Tyburn. Cromwell's head was placed on a spike at the Tower of London, where he remained for 30 years. It was ultimately reburied at Sidney Sussex College, Cambridge, in 1960. I say they hated that man. Now, the present day. Former President Trump went to the annual meeting of the National Association of Black Journalists in Chicago, Illinois. The meeting was supposed to have both candidates for president, including Joe Biden. And then after he resigned his candidacy, his replacement, Kamala Harris, was invited. Well, Kamala had an excuse and didn't show. A lot of the journalists were upset that former President Trump came. He was the first Republican candidate to come to this meeting in over 20 years, and that two decades ago was by Zoom and not in person. So when Trump entered, an ABC journalist, Rachel Scott, asked him at the very first a very strong question. Trump said, before he answered the query, that he was invited. Harris didn't come. The meeting started 35 minutes late. And then the journalist should have, instead of asking a very strong question, have at least said, hello. Or say something like, good to have you come. Later in the interview, the same questioner asked the former president, did he think that Harris was a DEI hire? Well, she was. President Biden said so when he appointed her. But Trump didn't mention this. She also asked, do you think that Harris was appointed as vice president because she was black? Trump answered that he thought she was an Indian from Southeast Asia and not black. It was only later he heard that she considered herself black. Well, that caused an uproar. I would recommend that you watch Judge Joe Brown's videos. He's a black man. You put it there, Judge Joe Brown. He will tell you that Kamala's mother was a Brahmin Indian. She married a man from Jamaica, which I assume was black. I thought they all were black in Jamaica. But he wasn't. Kamala's father was an Irish Brahmin Indian. Oh, Irish. Where'd they come from? Oh. So, Kamala isn't half Indian and half black. She is at least a quarter Irish with about three quarters Hindu Indian, with a little bit of possible black, if she has any black at all. Judge Brown tells how Kamala was financed and sponsored by George Soros, Jew, who was the owner of one-way bank that had over 1,200 indictments against it. Kamala was elected the Attorney General of California, and within 2 weeks dropped all the indictments against the bank. She was a tough prosecutor. The bank was then sold by Soros for $4.2 billion. Kamala later made Proposition 47, which helped destroy California. Yes, you can rob anything under, you haven't robbed anything until it's over $950. After this, Soros financed Kamala to her Senate seat from California and the United States Senate. And I believe he's still sponsoring her. Vice President and now President. Judge Brown says that he met her father, Donald Harris. He was a professor at Stanford University. That's higher than what my little adjunct professorship is. And he was a guide to Jamaican authorities in economics, a very well-known man. Kamala's father was descended from an Irishman and a Brahmin Indian. What? If his mother says that she is a Brahmin Indian and his father said that he is an Irish and Brahmin Indian, how does his daughter, Kamala, say that she is black? Now we'll get a little Jamaican history. Where is Jamaica? Well, I know it's in the Caribbean, but where is it? There's Cuba, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. There's Jamaica. South of Cuba is Jamaica. So we'll do a little Jamaican history. When and why were there Hindu Indians in Jamaica, an island south of Cuba? They were called Indo-Jamaicans who came and were brought from the Indian subcontinent to Jamaica following the 1833 abolition of slavery in the British Empire. When a new system called indentureship was introduced, bonded laborers from India were transported to 19 British overseas territories in Asia, Africa, and the Caribbean to fill the labor shortage created by the departure of former slaves from plantation. Where did this system come from? The Bible? The recruitment began in 1834 and ended on March 20th, 1917. It is estimated over 2 million people were indentured laborers during this period. For 72 years, from 1845 to 1917, 37,027 Indians were indentured to Jamaica. The system of indentureship ultimately shaped the history and culture of Jamaica through food, music, sports, business, and religion, creating a yet small, vibrant Indo-Jamaican society. Due to various economic, political, and social factors, Jamaica has experienced out-migration, with the Indo-Jamaican community becoming dispersed to the United Kingdom, Canada, the United States, and beyond. And before the Hindu Indians came, Ireland has a long shared history with Jamaica. In the 1650s, when England captured Jamaica from Spain, Oliver Cromwell needed to populate the new colony. Ireland, the eternal thorn in the side of the English, had a population of 1.5 million in 1641. 10 years later, the number was reduced by 60%. With 850,000, Irish people wasted by the sword, plague, famine, hardship, and banishment during the Confederation War, 1641 to 1652. Think about this for a minute. For every 10 Irish people and 10 years, there'd be only four left. Some died in battle. Some died in the plague that followed. Some died by hunger and the famine. And many were sent to different places, including the islands of the Caribbean, owned by the British, as slaves, and after 1833, as indentured servants. Vast numbers of Irish men, women, and children were forcibly transported by the English government to the Caribbean, many as indentured servants. Very few of the deportees had committed any great crimes. The goal was to populate Britain's new acquisitions. Many of the Irish were sent to their new captured land of Jamaica to populate this island. Large numbers of the Irish exiles died from heat and diseases as they struggled to adapt to the surroundings. It was soon thought that the Irish would have a better chance of survival if they were introduced to the climate at a younger age. So, for this reason, Cromwell sent 2,000 children between the ages of 10 and 14 years to work and, sadly, also to be bred with the blacks. Migration to Jamaica continued to the 17th century. The term red leg was coined. The fair skin of the Irish burnt with the red burn beneath the Caribbean sun. The Irish exiles were not cattle slaves. Their white skin meant that they would know freedom when their indentures expired after 6 years of hard work. The Irish contributed to Jamaica's changing demographic and motto, out of many, one people. Most Americans do not know that many Irish slaves were brought to Jamaica by the British. Oliver Cromwell, who overthrew British King Charles I by having him executed, placed tens of thousands of Irish in slavery and transported some to mainline plantations. Others were shipped to plantations in the West Indies, including Jamaica. Enslaved Irish were part of the force that wrested Jamaica from Spain in 1655. After the British took control of Jamaica, Cromwell, with his new island, had Irish slaves sent from Barbados and South Christopher to work the new land. Others were brought directly from Ireland. As early as 1656, Cromwell ordered those 2,000 Irish children to be taken to Jamaica and sold as slaves to English settlers. Later, 6,000 boys and girls were transported as slaves from Ireland to Jamaica, and that the total number transported there and to Virginia and to the Carolinas and New England, the American colonies, amounted to 10,000 people. It is almost an unknown fact that between 1651 and 1660, the Irish slaves far outnumbered the colonists. The Caribbeans have Irish accents traced back to Irish ancestors who settled there in the 17th century as servants of English-owned plantations. It is believed that Charles I, followed by Oliver Cromwell, sold over 500,000, that's a half a million, Irish Catholics into slavery throughout the 1600s. Just a half a million. Now here's a letter-known fact. Randall, leave it here. I'm going to read it. I want to know if anybody knows this. It's a little-known fact that a famous American has maternal roots that have been traced back to Monegal in country Offaly in Ireland in the 19th century. Monegal has a population of around 300 people, but this person's mother's side, his Irish third great-grandfather, Fulmorth Kearney, arrived in New York City in 1850, where all this other material ancestors were already there. Good. Does anybody know who he is? If you know, raise your hand. Kearney immigrated at the age of 19 and eventually resettled in Tipton County, Indiana, which is just north of Indianapolis. Kearney's father, Joseph, had been the village shoemaker. Still no hands up. The Kearney family immigrated to Ross County, Ohio, which is between Columbus and Portsmouth, in the first half of the 19th century. Falmouth Kearney's youngest daughter, Mary Ann, moved from Indiana to Kansas after her father's death in 1878. Mary Ann Kearney was the paternal grandmother of Stanley Dunham, President Barack Obama's maternal grandfather. Ann Dunham was born on November 29, 1942. That means she's 11. She would have been 11 days older than I am. At Wichita, Kansas, the only child of Madeline Lee Payne and Stanley Armour Dunham. Her mother, Madeline, was of predominantly English ancestry, with small amounts of Scottish, Welsh, Irish, German. Wild Bill Hickok was her sixth cousin, five times removed. She also descended from John Bunsen, an enslaved African man who lived in the 17th century colonial Virginia. Barack Obama is descended from the Irish, as well as other people. The small town has a life-size statue of both Barack and Michelle in the park. Life-size. He went there. He went there and had a pint of beer with his friend. His mother, Irish. And they had a song. There's no one as Irish as Barack Obama. It's a humorous folk song written in 2008 by the Irish band Harry Doo and Nancy Boyce. The song celebrates the Irish ancestry of former President of the United States. If they read their Bibles and understood what it said, they wouldn't celebrate it, but would rend their clothes and tear their beards like Ezra did. And there's a picture of his song that they have in Ireland about him. And I'll show you where it is. There's a map of Ireland. This is where Mungergal is, right there. Well, that was nothing to do with Kamala, but it's something to show that Irish is every place. The Irish, so everybody's got Irish in them. The big sin that happened to the Irish. Slave owners bred the African males with the Irish women and girls in the island of Jamaica. I'll read that again. Slave owners bred the African males with the Irish women and girls. Why did they do that? The reason, African Irish enslaved person, it is alleged, fetched a higher sale price. The love of money is the root. It fetched a higher sale price than those who were purely African or purely Irish. In 1833, the British Parliament passed the Emancipation Act. An estimate of Jamaica's population showed there were 311,000 enslaved Africans and people of African descent. This is 1833. 31,300 free colored, 16,600 whites, 11,000 free blacks. The free colored and black population included the owners of some 70,000 enslaved Africans. So blacks owned slaves. It was the custom of white planters to allow freedom and property, including slaves, to their Negro concubines. Oh my goodness. Rather than spending money on new slaves, the Jamaican population owners began mating Irish females with African men to create a new breed of slave that in the Caribbean climate was more apt labor and less commanded a higher value than full-blooded Irish slaves. Irish people are the second largest reported ethnic group in Jamaica after Jamaicans of African ancestry. Donald Harris, that's Kamala's father, ancestry state that his father was Irish Hindu Indian, and his mother was a Hindu Indian. It could be, it is not known, that his Irish father could have some black mixed in his breeding, but we don't know. He didn't think so. So what race is the next possible president of the United States? Kamala's father was Irish Hindu Indian, who married her mother, who was Hindu Indian. His ancestries are Irish plantation owners who had many slaves. They don't say that, does she? I have a thought about my father was a plantation owner who had many slaves. So how could his daughter Kamala consider herself to be black and a slave? Kamala spent 10 years climbing the ladder, sleeping through the process, of progressive politics by being the mistress of the married black man Willie Brown. He then married the anti-Christian Jew Doug Imhoff. He had an affair while he was married to his first wife, which led to his divorce. Kamala's vice president is Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, who is a Lutheran who seldom goes to church. Tim says that he goes to the Pilgrim Lutheran Church, which is part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, a mainline Protestant denomination that is theologically and politically liberal. They must be really liberal. That this Democratic Party is the most liberal, left-wing, communist party ticket in our history. The most liberal, left-wing, communist party in our history. It seems like a good match. As the Black Lives Matter rioters burnt down the Twin Cities when George Floyd died, that the governor, Walz, permitted, while Kamala fundraised to bail out the violent rioters, arsonists, robbers, and murderers who were arrested and then let go. And where's BLM now? With their leaders living in mansions taken illegally from the Black Lives Matter Fund. He supports LGBTQ rights, same-sex marriage, Pride Month. He puts tampons in the boys' bathrooms in elementary, middle, and high school. Elementary, middle, and high school. Gee. Is in favor of abortions, all abortions, transgender rights beginning with elementary school children. He closed the churches and schools during the COVID-19 pandemic. He spent his honeymoon and has been to China over 30 times, gives driver's license to illegal immigrants, and then they can register to vote. He left the military when he learned that they were going to be shipped to Iraq and fight, and so on and so on. Is he a Lutheran? So the Democratic Party has for its president candidate at an Irish Hindu Indian with maybe a little bit of black, with a husband who has committed adultery with his first wife and is an anti-Christian Jew. His vice president is a very liberal politician who is a very lukewarm Lutheran who has never read and probably even knew of Luther's book that he wrote near the end of his life. Her opponent, Donald J. Trump, has his eldest daughter who has converted to the Talmudic religion and is married to a member of an important anti-Christian family, Jared Kushner. His vice president, J.D. Vance, is married to a Hindu Indian, and he has three mulatto children. What a complete mess in a supposedly Christian Protestant nation. Who are we to choose? Are we choosing a foreigner, a stranger, or a brother? My conclusion. Brahman is the highest of the four Hindu castes in India. Castes are a system of social hierarchy developed in the Vedic period between 1500 and 600 BC. We are told that Abraham sent his six children by Keturah to the east. There is a tradition that these became the Brahmins in India. Even Manasseh ben Israel wrote that the Brahmas of India are descended from Abraham. If that is true, Then both Kamala's parents are descendants of Abraham and Keturah, plus her father is part Irish, descendant of Abraham and Sarah, and maybe part black. JD's wife is descended from the same people, Abraham and Keturah. The whole world is not becoming kind after kind, it is unkind after unkind. Luke 17:26. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. What was it like in the days of Noah? Were there mixed seed races in the world? Were all Adamic seed mixed with strangers? Are we getting close to what it was like 3,500 years ago? Since 1973, adultery or miscegenation has spread so quickly that we have at least 3 out of 4 people running for president and vice president as strangers, or whose immediate family who have strangers in their immediate family. No matter who we choose, we will elect strangers, and even our perpetual enemy as our rulers. May the Lord God have mercy on our souls. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.